Alrighty, folks, last lap. This is the part of the evening which we put our readers to the question. And of course, that means that somebody's going to help out because somebody has to torture me with questions as well. But yes, Justin is here, so we're perfectly okay for questions. However, I'm going to start with Joe, because Joe, when you introduced that fragment, you also mentioned a couple of novels, Summer Goddess and Isle Speaker, which clearly you have been working on and sounds like they're actually done. So can you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, Summer Goddess is set in the same universe as my previous published Crystal Link novels, you know, Raya and Nomad and Spark and Carousel. That is pretty much done. Roz and I are just going through the very final copy edits now, and that should be out sometime around December. So that's the next book. Isle Speaker is, I'm halfway through the second draft, which is the fun draft, which is where you make everything not suck. The first draft is you write it, the second draft is you make it not crap. So that's what I'm doing with that now. And then this new one that I read from Ghost of the Grey City is, I'm probably about 50,000 words into it. So that's the one after next.
Which one of these books was Roz complaining about having to take Star Wars jokes out of?
That would be the Summer Goddess, and she's taken most of them out, but she's missed one, and I'm not telling her where it is until it's published.
Pete, you read one of your magpie stories. I understand that there's actually a book coming out shortly, and possibly a book launch happening.
Yeah, so the book is being published on the 28th of June, and on the 30th of June I'm going to do a book launch. So yeah, it's A Tiding of Magpies. And the publisher is Kensington Gore.
Mavanwi, I know that the government is cutting down on the amount of money they're giving students for grants. I didn't realise that there was quite that sort of such a food problem at the university. would you care to explain?
I don't know. The idea just I've got like several ideas for short stories, and my short, because I normally write fantasy novels, and my short stories are never that short, but they're quite often sci-fi or horror or something else. And so yeah, that was just I went to the zombie walk in College Green, obviously, last year I think it was. I was like, oh, this is awesome. And I was like, yeah, but what if somebody went to a zombie walk and it really had zombies? And I was like, well, then what would be the greatest thing that could possibly happen, you know, at a zombie walk with real zombies? And also I did quite like the fact that the character takes a really, really long time to figure out what's going on. It's not bright, but yeah. So, and hence the eyeball, which my other half who edited it, she was like, I've read it once. I'm not looking at that bit again.
Jonathan, this book with Mr. Fleming in it, when it's published, will it be under the pseudonym of Mr. James Bond?
The Fleming is actually named not so much for Ian Fleming as his brother Peter Fleming, but the whole kind of spy thing. I wanted a nice sort of solid 1950s name, because it's my own creation of a sub-genre that I call T-Punk. And defining qualities of that, it's set in a more interesting early 1950s Britain, and that's one of them. I've got three T-Punk novels sitting there waiting to get published.
Doesn't Emma Newman have a copyright on the term T-Punk?
No,
I don't know. but now you've mentioned it, you probably will apply for one. Oh dear. Presumably the young lady in the prison cell is Emma Peel.
No, it's rather too early for Emma Peel. But I do have this family who keep reoccurring in my stories, the Vesperines. And they've turned up in the Malingen stories, and at least touched upon in the Cabal stories. And one of them's in this story. It's actually Kitty the Vesperine, who's on the table, who's handcuffed to the table. They're a desperate family by any standards.
Well, one of the things always impresses me about when you turn up, everybody else turns up with their bits of paper and they peer at it and read, and you just stand there and talk. How do you manage to memorise all these stories?
Well, that's actually part because I did a storytelling course, or I've done a couple of storytelling courses, and the trick is really easy. It's impossible to memorise a story word for word. Well, at least it is for me anyway. So what you memorise are points of the story, say half a dozen. And then the rest of the time, you just make it up as you go along. to get from it. Yeah, you blag it basically from one point to another. And as long as you know sort of like the half a dozen important points of the story, then you eventually get to the end more or less where you're supposed to. But if you think about it, that's how all fantasy storytelling started, isn't it, with Homer and the Celtic myths? They were all meant to be told in the same way, that the bards would remember half a dozen main points in the story. Every time they told it, it would be completely different. And that's part of the charm, in a way, because that means you can actually hear someone tell the story half a dozen times, and every time it will just be a little bit different and a little bit more fun.
Oh, I just have to try that sometime. Yes, challenging. Anybody got any questions they want to ask other readers? Joe, you promised me you'd ask some questions. No, that's all right. You made cake for me. I'm going to let you off. But... Oh, dear. Has just...
Wait for somebody else to ask one. Joe, where did you get that, the inspiration for that passage on the boat? Because that was one marvellous piece of writing, really, really wonderful. With the hearing the singing and that part. Yeah, tell us a bit more about that.
The original sort of inspiration for this that's becoming a novel is a story that I wrote many, many years ago called The Shipbreaker's Daughter, which was about a girl who, her father is a smuggler, and she has a very strong singing voice, and he basically uses her as a siren to lure ships onto the rocks, and she rebels because she doesn't want to do it anymore. So the novel is kind of expanded from that story because I wanted to sort of play around more with the idea of that. So it is kind of siren stories, but also sort of tiny. The previous story was told entirely from her point of view, so I hadn't done anything with the sailors, so I thought it would be interesting to look at it from the side of the sailors who were on the boat that was being lured to its doom. But thank you.
We have one at the back here, and then we'll come to Pete.
I'd just like to ask you where you got your inspiration from convent life, because obviously you wouldn't be privy to convent life. And I have been, so I would like to know where you got your inspiration for it.
Facts, yeah. Yeah, interesting. Research. I'm a born researcher. That's what I've been doing for years. When I got into the fantasy world, the first thing I did was get online. And it just strikes me that, you know, a lot of fantasy is made up, obviously. But the more solid you can make it, the better. I hate people looking at it and sort of going, that doesn't quite flesh out. So, you know, I did research medieval monasteries. I did look at priories. I did look at acolytes.
Have you ever watched The Mountain Sisters?
No. Sounds like I ought to.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's very real.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that particular part of my novel is a very small part, but I just actually feel that you've got to put some solidity to it in order to have it carry.
A friend of mine who lives in Aberaeron, he was actually sent to the monastery part of Ireland, and his sisters went to the Magdalene Sisters Institution, and it's bang on, absolutely. Having been a convent girl myself, I can tell you that it is very realistic, and I would advise you to watch the film.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks very much. Pete, you had a question.
Yeah, this is for Justin and Amanda. You've both written books set in ancient Egypt. So what is it about that era that's drawn you to write a whole book about it?
I suppose that the answer to that question is that it has played such a large part in the way we do and think and behave today. Perhaps not directly, but by repercussion of the original ideas of things. I guess my thinking about it is that you go back to the very first stirrings of things, which to my mind is Egypt in ancient history. And even though you can't maybe directly trace influence into today, you can certainly directly trace or indirectly trace influence, and therein lies the story, really. Because so that's the fascination for me, that so much began there, and I think it's to my mind, whenever something starts off how it starts off is crucial to how it's going to outplay. You know, and there are hundreds of historical examples about that fact. And so, you know, I've always loved the way history works, and particularly ancient history. So, hence the fascination and the want to write about those times.
Mine was the magic. I just like the idea of what they believed. Dneferu, she would believe that an image held an aspect of whatever it was depicting, and the ancient Egyptians believed if you drew something or wrote something down, it therefore became real. And in the novel, that is actually true. So that's how the gods and goddesses and everything can manifest and can affect what's going on in the in life. So that's basically making magic real.
Any other questions? Yay.
My question's for Joe. I've just read the short story that was the inspiration for your passage tonight, Joe, and I thought I caught in there somewhere a mention of the ship screaming. Did I? Yeah. Is the ship going to become a sentient character, or is that too much to ask of you?
It's really interesting that you should ask that, because the ships in Gods of the Great City are not sentient characters, but there are ships in Islespeaker that are sentient characters, and they are the spirits of people who have died, who have been sung into ships so that they can live on. So the ship in Islespeaker, the Artisan Rose, is the spirit of the murdered friend of the heroine's parents, and she is a living sentient ship, but the ships in Ghosts of the Grey City aren't.
Yeah, and anybody who's been in wooden ships knows what you mean when you say that the ship screamed. Anybody else got any questions? No? Anybody got any announcements? Yes, Joe.
Yeah, I've always got announcements. Okay, the pub night is in here next Monday if anybody wants to come to pub night. Pub night is always fun. Also, my publishers, Crystal Link, are open for fantasy and SF novel submissions until the end of this month. So you've got about a fortnight. And if you want to send something in and you haven't finished writing it, write it really fast. Next Fringe is May the... May the something, I'll tell you. It's May the whatever date it is. I think it's the 18th, if that's a Monday. 16th. It's the 16th. Thank you, Heather. It's the 16th. We've got Paul Cornell and Martin Waits, who also writes as Tanya Carver. So it's going to be a crime special. So come along to that. It'll be really good.
And then, is it the next Saturday, it's the 21st, that Paul has got a book launch at Forbidden Planet for Who Killed Sherlock Holmes, which hopefully he's going to be reading from when he comes and does our reading. So definitely worth turning up to next month. Coming up on Ujima, hopefully, fingers crossed, we've got Mark Wright, who does those J.T. Ellington Barbadian Detective Living in St. Paul's books. Possibly Sarah Hillary, who's had a launch in Bath last week. Absolutely fabulous Marnie Rome detective novels. And possibly Mike Carey. Maybe. Anybody else got any announcements? Pete, nothing happening with the Festival of Literature as yet. A bit too early for that. Kevlin, too early to advertise short stories? Yeah, we'll talk about that some other time. Right, well, there's Will?
I've got another horror book coming out on Friday, the 22nd, called The House Next Door.
And with good luck and a following wind before the end of the month, the final Juliet McKenna Aldebrecht Compass book, Eastern Tide, will be coming out from Wizard's Tower. So yay! Look out for announcements. Joe?
Yeah, can I just say thank you to everybody who read, especially Steve and Amanda, because it was their first time. So well done them, they read very well.
And I think we're done. Thank you very much, everybody.